Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Albion Roar Down Under, sponsored by Pure Media. My name is Richard Parker here in Auckland, New Zealand, and joining me every week is the founder of the Seagulls Down Under Supporters Club, Steve Longley. It's International Week, so we all get a break from getting up at daft o'clock to watch our team play. We thought it'd be a good opportunity to dedicate this week's show to talking about Seagulls Down Under and how it came about. So our guest this week is the original founder of the Brighton Supporters Club in Australia, Mike Price. He'll be telling us how it all started and why he decided there needed to be a supporters club in Australia. But before we speak to Mike, let's say hello to Steve. How's it going?
Yeah, hi Richard. Fine, thanks.
Good, good, good. So, Seagulls Down Under. How did it come about from your end?
Well, I arrived here in 2007 after about 6 or 7 months of hunting around for a supporters club and couldn't find anything. I had heard reports that there was something going on somewhere, you know, but as I say, I hunted around, couldn't find anything, and then a friend in the UK put me in touch with a guy here. I went along to meet him, Mike Dooner, who was also with two other Albion guys, Mike Levine and Steve Phantom. So myself, Mike, and another guy called Tim Ayling all met in the casino for what was my first ever Albion game, which was a dull 1-1 draw with Bournemouth. It was just the four of us. And there would have been five, but the guy called Russell Ward never turned up. And the following evening, I got a phone call. Very unusual for Russell, because Russell listens to every game, or did then, and obviously now it's all on live. I get a phone call from Russell to say, where are you? And I said, well, I'm at home in bed, mate. And he said, well, I thought we were all meeting in the casino for the game. I said, yeah, but it was last night. So he's never lived that one down. So we always make him, rub that in. Make sure you get the right date, Russell. We sort of just talked about it, starting a supporters club, and, you know, was there any need with the internet and everything else? And I thought, oh, you know, it'd be good to get, you know, a dozen guys in the pub to watch the odd game and get a few more people involved. And it took me about another year before I decided, oh, let's just do this. Let's just get on with it. And I started the Facebook page, which for the first 6 months of the Facebook page, you're sitting there when you start something like this and going, is anybody going to join? You know, and we had this article in the Argus were looking for supporters from around the globe, and I saw this and I got about 20 of us. I think you were there, Mike, actually, weren't you?
I did come along.
That, yep. First photo we did at the bridge, there was about 20 of us there, and that photo sort of kick-started it, really, because people from the UK then started saying, oh, do you know there's a supporters club in Australia, to their relatives and friends, and people started coming along, and you know, and here we are today with over 515 members, whatever it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, that's awesome. So you've just heard Mike Price there. He's on the line with us, so we'll introduce Mike now. So Mike, so before Steve started the Facebook page, you actually started a supporters club yourself back in 1987.
I did. So this was the pre-internet days, and it was really impossible to get any information about what was going on with the club. In fact, any football in the UK, there was almost no information out here. But then a magazine which called itself British Soccer Week, it's now British Football Week, but back then was, we all called it soccer out here, it started up, and it would just have sort of the match reports you might see in The Guardian on a Sunday, sort of half a page for the Premier League, a paragraph for the First Division or Second Division or whichever division we were in. So you started to get a little bit of information, and then they advertised, although they made space available on their back page for anyone wanting to start a supporters club for any teams. So I thought, oh well, why not? There was about 30 other teams that put their names up, so I just said, yeah, if you're interested in joining a Brighton supporters club out here in Australia, contact me. and I wasn't sure if anybody would. But I got about 50 people wrote to me. Which
50? That's impressive.
About 50, far more than I expected. And I heard at one stage it was about the fourth biggest supporters club in Australia at the time. So I had a big list of names, but I had nothing to really to offer them. So, again, a bit like Steve, went back and contacted the club and said, look, we've got 50 people out here who want to join a supporters club. Maybe you could put something in the program and see if maybe people could send me some information. So, yeah, I'm told a little thing went in the program, and about three people contacted me. But they were magnificent. So someone cut out the match reports from the Evening Argus for every single game. So John Vinnigham's full write-up and sent them out. Someone else would send me a program or two every month. And someone else, this was back in the fanzine era, so someone else sent me pretty much every copy of Gull's Eye and Smith Must Score. And that they would come through during the month. And then once a month I would sort of photocopy them, maybe put in a few comments of myself for things I'd read but hadn't, didn't think I could photocopy the full thing, and then just mailed it out to everybody. So people sent me a few bucks to cover the stamps. I was at uni at the time, so I had a bit of time on my hand, and we managed to stay really well informed, and it was a great little club back then.
It's a long way removed from the speed of the internet, where you can get results instantly. You can listen to the game live. You can watch the game live. You know, I know back in 1987, I think we were in Div 3, were we?
Yes, I think we would have been.
And so you're basically getting newspaper cuttings sent over to you. So your fans, your supporters club would have had the information sort of like maybe a week later, 2 weeks later, because of the post and everything.
You don't know just how bad it was in those days, that the scores you could get on a recorded line about 12 hours after the game was played. If you were lucky, some days it wasn't updated. You had to wait for the paper on a Monday. I remember when we played Notts County in the playoff final, there was absolutely nothing here. People would ring home and get someone to put BBC Sussex by the phone. But in those days, it was about $3 or $4 a minute. So yeah, it would cost you $200 just to listen. I rang the BBC Sussex every 15 minutes to try and get a score update. Yeah. And they ended up not giving me the right score. I thought we were 1-0 up until the last few minutes. So, and then they said, oh, no, sorry, you lost 3-1. So that was a bit harsh. But to get this sort of information was just magnificent. And also, I think being the fanzine age, there was a lot of really interesting behind-the-scenes stuff, which really you hadn't come across before ever. So I think we were well-served back in those days.
Now, but Mike, I think, sorry, yeah. Mike, I hear you're an Aussie. So what is your background and how did you come about sport in Brighton?
Yeah, look, I am an Aussie, born in Melbourne. My dad moved to the UK for work when I was two. Ended up in Worthing, so my earliest memories of life are in Worthing, though I was only there till I was six. I came back to Australia when I was six. My local football team was called the Seagulls, as it happened. Just spending a few years in the UK made me a better footballer than anyone else out here, so I got very involved in the club. In fact, my dad ended up becoming president of the club. Then it was interesting, when we made the FA Cup final, In fact, I probably even lost track with the club until we got promoted to Division 1 as it was. And then I started seeing the results again and following them. And so when we made the cup final, my dad wrote to the club and said, oh, do you know you got some Seagulls fans in Australia? And I don't think either of us ever expected anything to happen. But a week later, in the post, came a cup final shirt, cup final scarf, and a cup final hat.
Whoa.
I thought, what a club.
That's pretty awesome.
This is fantastic. It is. So I started wearing them to training every day. I remember we all got together down at the club to watch the final. A bit of a sad day, but, it was great to see my team up there. It's funny, another shirt, hat, arrived about 3 months later, which they'd sent via Seamail. So someone must have sent one by Seamail and then realised it wasn't going to turn up in time. So that was great. And then that certainly made me think, well, this is a pretty good club. Better start following them even more closely. We went back to the UK in the end of 1986 or 85. I got to see two games, and beating Portsmouth away on Boxing Day, and then beating Palace at home on New Year's Day. So that was a good year to go over and see two games. And shortly after that, the Supporters Club got founded, and I've been a huge fan ever since.
So, Steve, how did the Supporters Club that Mike start then amalgamate with the Supporters Club that you now, or that we now know as Seagulls Down Under?
Well, I think if I'm right, Mike handed over the reins to a guy called John Reeson, who's in Adelaide. Is that right, Mike?
Yeah, that's right. When the internet sort of really did get going, what I was offering suddenly, you didn't need to wait 2 weeks to find the score or to get a match report. So it sort of kind of put me out of business. So John Rees in Adelaide took it over for a while. It did go on the back burner till Steve came along.
So John Rees took over, and he was... what I'd heard about in the UK, but obviously when I got here I couldn't find anything about it, but John had sort of knocked it on the head, you know, a few years before that, and then of course I came along and reignited it. But it's been a lot easier for me, obviously, with the internet. I wouldn't like to have gone through what Mike did, and fair play to him for doing that, but the internet obviously has made everything so much easier, the world so much smaller. I get emails from all across the world, from Albion fans in the States, in Asia. I've got a guy in Brazil who contacted me regularly, a guy in Hong Kong who contacts me regularly, and it's just that it's like an expat community out there that people probably in the UK might be unaware of, although I know it was brought up on the Raw a little while ago about expat supporters clubs, but here in Australia we have got that community, and I say there's over 500 of us, and not everybody's involved with the football, not everybody takes a lot of interest in for the football, but what I have done unknowingly is brought together a Sussex expat community.
Yeah.
And it's quite phenomenal when you hear some of the stories from people and you realise what a small world it actually is. You know, these people come on board. I'll just tell you a story that happened just recently, last month. A guy in Melbourne who I've never met but I've spoken to quite often, he grew up in Horsham. I grew up in Hove. We had no idea of each other. He joined the page probably in its early days, so we've been in contact for about 8 years. And he contacted me last month, I think it was, and unfortunately he'd come back to the UK. His father had died. But he contacted me and said, "You won't believe this." And I asked him what it was, and he said that his father and my father had served together in the Navy from 1959 to 1964 and been in contact with each other ever since. And my father went along to his father's funeral. And you hear these stories, or I get these stories all the time, and you realise that, gee, it is a small world. And all these links that go back to the Albion. It's strange. I mean, to fill a whole podcast with stories similar to that.
It's amazing that, like you said, this Australian supporters club, and it's not just Australia, obviously it's New Zealand as well, but it is not just for Down Under. It's we've got all these people from all over the world. Now, do you think that's because there's a lack of a supporters club anywhere else like the Seagulls Down Under?
Yeah, I was contacted about 3 years ago by a guy in the States who wanted to start a supporters club and asked me the best way to go about it and everything else. And I did give him some info, but unfortunately never heard back from him. But since then, actually in the States, there's been a number of people that have become quite active on social media who I'm in contact with. And it probably is. I mean, somebody did say to me once, why don't you just change that to a expat page for Albion fans around the world? And I said, well, I'd rather just, you know, keep it. But it's hard. You've got to just keep it regional, because otherwise it doesn't mean a lot of things to a lot of people when you start organising stuff, events, meetups in different parts of the country and what have you. People don't understand the logistic nightmare of trying to organise. You know, it's not like, oh, let's all go down the pub in Brighton and watch a game. You know, watching a game in Sydney is hard enough to get people out, and of course the time. So, I mean, going back to the internet, it just makes the lives much easier. I mean, you know, Mike wouldn't have been able to organise meetups in his day.
Yeah, look, I do remember we did have one. There was a supporters club football tournament, and I think eight supporters clubs were able to put a team together, and we were one. So that was great. About 20 people turned up, about 15 played, and again, it just showed that, yeah, I don't think Liverpool had a team for their supporters club, or certainly Palace didn't, but we were able to put one together.
So, Mike, Steve tells me you've got an interesting Tony Bloom story.
Yeah, I do. So I live in Sydney, but grew up in Melbourne. My family are down there, so I go down there quite a bit, and often coincides with sporting events such as the tennis. And so I was down watching the tennis a few years ago, and I also have a little bit of an interest in poker, so I went along to the casino. And I heard somebody on my table say, oh, you know, the Aussie Millions are on, and there's a whole lot of big names out here. I saw Tony Bloom on a table the other day. I thought, oh, that's interesting. He must be in town as well. So went back to my room that night and got online and found out that he'd made the final table in a $500,000 buy-in tournament with a couple of... Well, it was a $100,000 buy-in with a couple of million-dollar... first prize, and that the final table was being held the next day at the casino and being televised. So I thought, oh, I better go along, watch a bit of that, cheer him along. And I did. He started off really well, knocked out a couple of people. I remember after he knocked someone out, I sort of yelled out, "Seagulls!" while everyone else was cheering, and he turned and looked to me and gave me a couple of thumbs up. So I thought, oh, good on you. So after about an hour and a half, there was a break in the tournament where they get to go for a toilet break, and I sort of wandered over to the toilets and waited for him to come out. And as he came out, I sort of just went up and said, "Look, hi Tony, you don't know me, but I'm part of the supporters club out here in Australia, and I just want to thank you for everything you've done for the club. It's just fantastic." And I shook his hand, and he said, "Oh, I didn't know there was a supporters club out here." I said, yeah, there's a few hundred of us, and we're all big fans." He goes, "Oh, tell me more about it." And I said, by now sort of the bell is ringing for them, the tournament's going to start again, and he's literally got $1 million on the line. And he said, "Oh, no, don't worry about that." And I said, okay. He said, "Look, I'll tell you what, I'll get back to the game, but give me your details and I'll send you an email after I'm finished." And I said, "Yeah, okay, fair enough." Thinking I'd never hear from him again, and handed over an email address and let him get back to the game. In fact, I ended up having to go off, but he ended up coming second and won $1 million. But then he went back to his room, sent me an email saying, "Yeah, lovely to meet you. I want to hear more about the supporters club. Maybe we could all get together and go out sometime." So I immediately told Steve, because, Steve's the one who's good at getting everybody out. And sadly, I wasn't able to fly down for it because my brother flew up, which is something he does about once every 5 years. But Steve, you went down to Melbourne with a few guys and had an afternoon at the pub with Tony Bloom, didn't you?
Yeah. He sent me an email, actually, saying, I understand this is a supporters club and it'd be good to meet up with a few people. Actually, at that time, we probably only had about 50 people on the page because it was in its infancy. We've only been going about 6 months.
What sort of year are we talking?
It was 2011, February 2011.
Right.
And so he sent me this email and blah, 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 and I chatted to a few people and asked if they wanted to fly down there. Mike Levine came with me, he's a good friend, and off we went. We went down to Melbourne and we met up with four of the guys that were down in Melbourne. I think there was probably only about 10 guys in Melbourne at the time. Four of them came along. We met him in the pub, actually in Brighton in Melbourne, near where he lives, and he was great, and we did a Q&A with him, chatted quite openly about, you know, the club and things that had gone on, and the stadium and all this sort of thing, because it was all fascinating to us to hear about the stadium, because, you know, it wasn't common knowledge to know a lot of this stuff that was going on behind the scenes. So it was an insight that he was telling us. And we presented him with a Seagull. I had a few Seagulls Down Under t-shirts made up. I mean, to be honest, they were a bit tatty. I handed him this Seagulls Down Under t-shirt and we did a photo with a banner that I got made up. And he was great and we kept in contact. I was emailing him probably once every 6 months to tell them about the supporters club. Yeah, and we've kept in contact ever since. But I, you know, what I'd said to him at the time, is there any chance of us getting made an official supporters club? And he said, oh yeah, I can't see that being a problem. Well, it took 18 months of me banging on the door eventually to get us recognised as an official supporters club.
So what does that entail?
Well, I mean, we get listed on the club's website for a start, but you know, I think you've got to be in favour with the club a bit for them to do that. You know, you can't just sort of start up with about five or six guys and expect to become an official supporters club. So I worked hard at it for 2 years before they sort of took us on board. And to be honest, the club have been brilliant. You know, I couldn't have done a lot of this without the club. And, you know, I won't name names at the club.
Go on, you know you want to.
No, I don't. No, I mean, all right, so the Paul Barbers, you know, Tony himself, Paul Camlin, everybody behind the scenes, and even, you know, people that have now left the club who used to do the program articles for me, and people that are still at the club that do things, and you know, you just got a good relationship with the club, just help. And obviously it helps for people here as well, you know. It's not so easy now for me to go to the club and try and assist fans that are traveling back to the UK for matches. I can't do that anymore, but back at the with Dean, you know, you'd be able to sort of ping off an email and say, look, got somebody coming over, can you help them get tickets? And you know, that changed when, of course, when we went to the Amex, but back in the day, it was, you know, it was just a link, and people realized that there was a link and they felt part of the club. And I hope they still do feel part of the club, even, you know, things have moved on now with the Premier League and everything else. But we have created an Albion community within Australia and New Zealand. And, yeah, long may it last. it has become a bit like a runaway train, to be honest, because it's hard to control now.
Especially in the last year when the Albion got to the Premier League. Because why don't you talk a little bit about what happened pre-season? Once we got to the Premier League, you were bombarded with calls from all sorts of people.
I got media and people from all over the world, really, and even you know, there was a lot of sort of, I wouldn't say half-hearted Albion fans, or maybe they were guys that here in Australia and New Zealand that maybe like second generation Albion fans. They were born and bred here. Grandfather was an Albion fan, or grandfather was born in Sussex, and so they picked up on Brighton being. Of course, when we went up, those guys sort of landed on my desktop and asking to join the supporters club. And it's great. And now there's a lot of guys that have joined the supporters club that probably weren't overly interested in football or something. In fact, I'll tell you a good story about a lady called Pam, who lives in south of Sydney, who emigrated out here when she was 4 years old in 1954. Never had any interest in football whatsoever. None at all. But then married a Lazio-mad Italian who obviously was well into his Italian football. And she started working in this truck stop. And the guy that worked in the truck stop, and this was quite recently, the guy that worked in the truck stop was a West Ham fan. And then one day a Brighton fan came to the truck stop and they were having a bit of banter. And she said, oh, I'm from Brighton. And started looking up the results. Now, she's gone about 50-odd years without the Brighton football team ever crossing her mind. And now she's sort of taken a little bit of interest and she's found us and joined the page. And then she sent me a message probably about 6 months into her joining. She sent me a message. She said, I just want you to know that your page has got me obsessed with the Albion. And 2 weeks later, there's a photo of her in an Albion t-shirt standing at the truck stop for these Australian truck drivers. And she said, I'm educating the truck drivers of Australia on Brighton and Albion. And I said to her, you weren't wrong when you said you'd become obsessed, were you? And when she left, one of the truck drivers made her this Albion cake with the crest on the top of the cake. It was great. And you hear stories like that all the time, you know. And it's really hard to just tell them on the internet. You know, this is a good thing. But these stories come my way all the time of people that have, you know, come from different walks of life. I just think it's great. And I'm just happy that, you know, I brought all these people together and we can have a good chit-chat about the football.
Absolutely. Okay, you are listening to the Albion Roar Down Under, sponsored by Pure Media, the full-service video production company based here in Auckland. Visit www.pureproductions.co.nz for more information on how Pure can create a fully customised, crafted video for your business. And also, if you'd like to get in touch with us, our email is albionroardownunder@gmail.com. Now, Mike, I know you've got to go soon, so just quickly, I wanted to get your opinion of this season. So, do you keep up with the Albion at the moment in the Premier League?
I certainly do. Watched every single game in full. Thanks to Optus. Are we allowed to mention sponsors' names?
We've mentioned Optus, Fox, all sorts.
It will be another story, Steve. I mean, the welcome to the Premier League party that Optus put on. Did they contact you for that, or did you contact them?
No, they contacted me. That was another thing. Yeah, Optus, who are a bit like Sky Sports in the UK or BT Sport, they contacted me just after we went up, as well as Hahn, the brewery. And Hahn wanted to help us celebrate promotion, so they supplied all the beer beforehand in the pub. And then Optus contacted me and said they wanted to throw a party for us because we were the first team to go up in their tenure of the Premier League. So off we went to the casino. I don't know what, there was about 50 of us. I think we ran up about a $5,000 bar bill, which they paid for, you know.
And, yeah, big signs up, welcome to the Premier League.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was great. I mean, I don't remember too much about it, apart from the fact that we lost, but I think we were all absolutely rat-assed.
It was a good night.
What did Optus get out of it, though? Did they film the party or anything?
No, they didn't, actually. They took some photos and stuck them on the internet, but that was about it.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, Richard, if you want to watch the Premier League, there's one game a week on free-to-air, but even the main pay TV channel doesn't have the Premier League rights. Optus went and bought it. So you can only watch it if you go through Optus. And so I guess they wanted to make sure that...
So new customers.
New customers were around. So I was an existing customer, luckily. So, yeah, so I've been able to watch every game in full this season. And, yeah, really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was clear early on that we certainly weren't going to be outclassed, that we were as good as anybody. I actually thought we were a little bit unlucky with the results. And I think Chris has done a magnificent job. I think the recruiting team have done a magnificent job. I think there's probably some Tony Bloom, almost Moneyball influence that, yeah, given what we've got and the money we've got, I think, yeah, Chris has us set up fantastically and got the most out of the squad and the money we've spent. And it's been good to see that, yeah, we've been competitive all the way through.
Are we going to be in the Premier League next season?
It certainly hope so, although I don't think it's a done deal. I think we've got three games, the next three. I think we need 3 points, which should be enough. Anything's possible in football, as we found out in the last three games of last season, where we needed one win to be champions and we couldn't get it. But yeah, there's no reason to think we shouldn't. I think we've definitely played well enough to deserve it.
To be fair, last season we'd achieved what we wanted to achieve. The championship title would have been a great addition to that, but I think we'd already achieved promotion. So.
Exactly. Yeah, we'd had our party already out here at the casino. Yeah. So I think we'll be even better next season. That we'll continue to build on it.
Okay, that's awesome. Okay, Mike, thanks for joining us on the Albion Roar Down Under. It's been great to have you on. And it's great to hear how the Supporters Club started and its evolution into what it is now. So, yeah, awesome for joining us. Thanks a lot. And let's hope the Albion can stay up this season.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on, Richard. And thanks for doing this podcast. I've really enjoyed listening to it. And thanks, of course, again, Steve. You are doing a fantastic job. And look, you can't please all the people all the time, as you know, but 99% of us really, really appreciate everything you're doing. So thanks, Steve. Keep it up.
Checks in the post, mate.
Okay, see ya. Right,
take care. Bye. Steve, we'll talk some more about Seagulls Down Under. Now, you've got some interesting stories, some funny stories, but what happened with the Middlesbrough game when we played Middlesbrough away the season before last?
Yeah, that was just, I think a lot of people will say that was just one of the, I know the result didn't go our way, but just the whole going to the casino thing. I mean, we had problems getting the game on. They wanted to show Man United Norwich, which was a nothing game. So there was a whole load of things, issues going on behind the scenes, trying to get the casino to show it on a big screen. We eventually sorted that nonsense out, and about five or six of us turned up pretty early at the casino. All the tables were reserved at the front, and gradually blue and white shirts started walking through the door, and I think it was Paul Reed's brother, actually, that turned around to me and said, "Where are they all coming from?" And I said, "Well, I don't know, to be honest. I was quite shocked because all these people had put their names down, and people that hadn't put their names down to come, I was expecting about 60 or 70, and you know, there was 130 of us in the casino, which was a far cry from the four of us that sat in a quiet casino to watch the Bournemouth game 8 years earlier. And the thing was, not only were there 130 of us in there, but when we started making a noise and started singing before the game, people just started coming in off the poker tables and, you know, getting off the poker machine and filling up the bar. And I was stood next to Paul Reed and I said, have you had a look behind you? And we both turned around and looked back. You couldn't see the bar. There must have been 1,500 people in that casino. And I think the bulk of them were cheering us on, to be honest. And there was probably half a dozen Middlesbrough fans in there who were obviously ecstatic. But it was just an awesome night. You know, and there's been plenty of experiences that have been like that, where you just think, wow, this is just great. The first Renf game being another example. You know, you put something on like that, you just don't know how many people are going to turn up, if it's going to be a success. And I will just backtrack, actually, because 2 weeks prior to that, Facebook changed their setup on the pages, and I had about, 200 people on the page, and all of a sudden Facebook Gestapo came along and deleted the page because they said it was not a proper name set up under a person's name, and made it a like page, and I just like that lost contact with 200 people, of which 30 or 40 of them were coming to the Renf game, and I'm running around panicking for 2 weeks. And to be fair, the club were very good. I contacted the club. They put a thing out there to say, if you're Seagulls Down Under member, you know, get back on this new page, put a link up for the page. I went through grad, slowly but surely, people started coming back to the new page. And I had to set it up as a group page, which is not ideal because there's certain things on there you can't do as a group page. But, you know, now look at us, we're 500 people. And there are still people out there that I would like to have got back, that still haven't rejoined the page, and it's a bit of a shame, really, so they're probably not that into the football. Although there was one young lady in Canberra who joined the page, who I tried to contact, and I don't know, I just never got any reply from her, but she's born and bred Australian. Her father came out here as a three-year-old. Father's got no interest in football whatsoever. He's an AFL man, and she started following the Albion. And this went on for about 8 years, and finally the father turned around and said, why do you support Brighton Home Albion? And she said, well, because Grandad's from Eastbourne. It's the nearest club. And he turned around and he said, yeah, but Grandad was a Palace fan. And she said, well, I'm not going to change my allegiance now. I spent 8 years supporting Brighton.
So talk about the football fans down under night. That was an interesting night as well. And you had to make a speech.
Yeah, that was... so we did the first Renf game. A couple of people put it forward as event of the year. And I got notified by football fans down under, this has been nominated as event of the year. And I wasn't quite sure what that meant or what we're supposed to do. But you had to get votes. So as many votes as you could for that. For that event, which was, you know, it's a funny way of doing it, to be honest, but I thought, well, if that's the case, I'm going to put my heart and soul into this and try and get as many votes as possible. And of course, went to North Stand chat, went to all the Facebook pages, and I was asking people for their votes, and people must have got fed up with me after about a month, because I'm banging on about these votes. And we made the final three, so you don't know what's going to happen. We had to go down to the hotel, all suited and booted. The club found out about it, and I asked the club if we could get some ties sent over for the thing. So the club very kindly donated, I think there was 12 of us, 12 ties. We all went along in our Albion ties, all suited. Our category came up, alongside two others. I can't even remember what the other two were. And he said, and the winner is Seagulls Down Under and the Crystal Palace Supporters Club. And I just looked gobsmacked. I just, I couldn't believe it. And off I went up to the front to make the speech, which I hadn't even put anything down. I didn't think we were going to win it. And I'm not a very emotional guy, to be honest, but I did actually get quite emotional when I got up there, and I just kept thinking to myself, you know, what am I going to say? And I was actually, I may not have shown it amongst the guys who were on our table, but I was actually as nervous as hell to make that speech in front of all those people in the room. And I just talked about Robert Eaton and the charity and everything else. Of course, the whole thing's, you know, grown even more since that day. We just donated the $7,000 to a charity in Australia through the rent. And it was just phenomenal. And I went back to my seat that evening after I left the stage, and my legs were like jelly. I just said to somebody, get me a drink. I make it a double. I couldn't. My legs, honestly, I was shaking. I was. And then, unknown to me, the next category was Supporter of the Year, and somebody had nominated me, and I'd been put up into the top three. I didn't even know anything about this. And it came up, and I said, and I just looked and I thought, I can't make the walk again between my seat and the stage. My legs are like jelly. If I win it, I don't know what I'm going to do. I didn't win it. The guy that won it was very deserved of winning it, a guy from Wellington Phoenix.
A guy from Wellington Phoenix won Supporter of the Year.
I'll tell you why, because he did a
lot. He was the only one.
A smashy and nice, he would say, isn't it? It does a lot of good work for charity.
Oh, right.
But he had a huge backing from Wellington Phoenix and McDonald's, and, you know, the work he did was fantastic. I was just put up there. Somebody that runs a supporters club. I at that particular time, I wasn't doing anything that was out of the ordinary. I was just sitting in front of my computer getting a few people together. But, you know, very kind of somebody to nominate me. But it was just a great night, you know, and things have happened since then that have blown my mind, to be honest. Even that night, you know, we're outside at the bar after. And Mark Bosnich came over and he said, to be great speech. And I said, thanks very much. And he said, give me your phone. And he put his number in my phone and said, you want me to come to the next one? Give me a call, I'll come along. Unfortunately, Bozza, as we know, is very hard to get hold of. So Bozza, if you're listening...
Please return Steve's call.
So yeah, Steve, it's a bit of a standing joke, that one.
Yeah. So Steve, obviously there's been a lot going on with Seagulls Down Under. So what would you say was the absolute highlight of the, how many years now have you been running it?
It's eight years this year.
So what's been the highlight in those 8 years?
There's a number, to be honest, there's a number of highlights. I mean, obviously the Middlesbrough game, 130 people turning up, that was just fantastic. The winning the award, but I suppose bringing people together is a day-to-day highlight for me. You know, it's just you can't sort of put it into words. It's just we've got such a good community down here. You know, obviously there's the odd little spat now and then, you know, but most of the time everybody on the Facebook page gets on, and you know, we don't have any of that vindictive stuff you get on some of the other pages. I think probably a lot of that's to do with the fact that you're so far away from home that maybe you're just glad of that contact with other Albion fans. You know, we've got Albion fans that are stuck away in the middle of nowhere that are on the page. They would have no contact with any like-minded Albion fans around them. You know, we've got a guy in South New Zealand. I think the nearest Albion fan to him is about 400 kilometres away, or something like that. But the same with the guy that's stuck out in the middle of, in between Adelaide and Melbourne. You know, all these little pockets. There's a guy up in Darwin, or the other side of Darwin. You know, these are people that wouldn't have any. They can go to, you know, other Facebook pages, Brighton related Facebook pages, but they won't get all the information that they would need, like, you know, when the game's, it's easier now than it was before, but before, you see, I used to put up all the illegal live streams, so they wouldn't have had any of that if I hadn't jumped on the Facebook page. I'll tell you another funny story about the live streams, actually. Quite a few years ago, I struck up this relationship online with the guys at WYSIWYG, which is now the Quick Free.
Yes.
Streaming thing, but it was WYSIWYG then. And I don't know, I just sent them a message one day, and they sent a message back. And I said, are you showing this game? Yeah. And so I would message them to make sure that we're going to show a stream of certain games that were going to be online. Now, there was no live game in the UK. Brighton weren't on live. But for some unknown reason, the Albion game was being shown in Sweden, live in Sweden, and it was the only country in the world that was showing it. And I thought, that's strange. So I contacted WYSIWYG and I said, look, and this was in the tail end of the WYSIWYG days.
Yeah.
I said, look, there's a stream going out in Sweden. Is there any chance of making that that stream, you know, worldwide, so that we can all get hold of it? And he said, oh, I'll see what I can do. And he came back to me and he told me, he had this really long email about how WYSIWYG was going to have to shut down because the Spanish government wanted to fine them $1.2 million for showing illegal streams in Spain, so. And at the end he said, but I might have a guy in Malaysia who can stream it for you. And I went, what? What's going on here? And 2 days later he said, yeah, my guy in Malaysia said he'd stream it. And there we had it. We had access to the Albion. I can't even remember what game it was now. We had access to this, and I'm like, wow, this is good. Straight onto Facebook.
Yeah.
Guys, there's a stream. It's only going out in Sweden, but we've got access to it.
And that is why we need to stay in the Premier League, so we can watch every game still without having to dive into illegal streams. Unfortunately, yeah. I had to dive into an illegal stream for the Man United game last week, and it was so bad, I left it.
Yeah. Gone are those days, right? And you're just sitting there in the middle of the night and the thing starts freezing.
Oh, it's so frustrating. So frustrating. Yeah. Okay, Steve, so we've got a few minutes left. So let's talk about this season and where you see Seagulls Down Under in the future. Do you see the page just getting stronger with more members?
Yeah, I'd like to think so. You just wonder how many more people there are out there. There are a lot of people out there that aren't on social media, so that's sort of, you know, I try my best, and it's really hard. I've got about 8 members that don't do social media, and so if there's anything going on in their area, I have to email them, which is almost archaic in this day and age. Yeah. Emailing people to tell them that there's an event in Melbourne or Perth or whatever.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, you know, that's what you have to do. And quite often, to be honest, I've got so much going on the page, it's hard to remember. Hard to remember to email these people, and you've got this going on in the back of your head, these people that are in various parts of the country.
Yeah.
Yeah, you try and do your best, and you know, you can't, as Mike said, you can't please all the people all the time. And you know, I know that I'm under no illusions that, you know, some of the stuff I might do doesn't please somebody, or, you know, I just try and do what I feel is best for the supporters club and best for everybody on it.
I think most people will appreciate the work you put into it, Steve. And long may it continue. I just want to briefly talk. It is International Week, and I just want to briefly talk about the England team and the fact that Gareth Southgate decided not to pick Glenn Murray or Lewis Dunk. Now, from a Brighton point of view, I feel pleased because they get a nice rest now, and they'll be all ready to go for the Leicester game next weekend. But the flip side is, let's be fair, they both deserve to be in the England side. Gareth Southgate just doesn't want to pick any Brighton players. Why is that?
I don't think it's that he doesn't want to pick any Brighton players. I think even if they were playing for a lesser team in the Premier League, I think they'd be exactly the same scenario. Because just like every other England manager, he hasn't got the balls to pick somebody that's not playing for a bigger side or...
You know, but he's picked a Bournemouth player, and he's picked a Burnley player. So are you saying to me, Bournemouth are a bigger side than Brighton? So
no,
they
not,
could take a player and pick him for England. So that doesn't wash with me. I think it's a conspiracy. I don't think he wants to pick Brighton players because he's ex-Palace. They have said it.
Yeah, I saw an interview he did yesterday about racism in Russia, and he was answering these questions. Answering political questions. Why is he answering political questions when there's more hard-hitting questions to be answered? Why is he taking Henderson to the World Cup?
I totally agree.
That's the number one question.
I think with Glenn Murray also is that Glenn Murray offers something different up front for England rather than the players that he's already picked. He's a target man. He's a great header of the ball, as we know. And he will bring something different. I'm not saying that if Glenn Murray's in the squad, you start him, but he would certainly be an option to bring him on, something different to change the way we play if it's not working. But it's the same old thing with England. The England squad is always going to be the same old players that get picked, whether they're in form or not. Now, this rubbish about him going, I'm only going to pick players that are playing for their team, well, that's obviously wrong, because Welbeck's not playing for Arsenal, is he? So he's embarrassed himself there.
There's a few instances like that, to be honest. But the problem is, these players, all right, some of them are fairly good players in their own right, but the players that you see week in and week out in the Premier League are only as good as the team around them. And they've got world-class players. You know, Sterling's got De Bruyne playing with him. So when he goes to the England team and he's got Henderson. there's a big difference there, isn't there?
I don't understand why Jordan Henderson is even playing for Liverpool. He is, as a footballer goes, what is he? What does he do? What does he bring to the team? Whenever I've seen him play for England, he's terrible. He never brings anything.
Well, there's not just him, though. There's other players in that side as well that just don't perform at international level.
I just think there's no motivation. you need an England manager who's going to motivate these players. Whenever the players go on international duty, they see it as a holiday. They're not motivated to play for England. They're more worried about playing for their clubs. That's who pays them. I don't think there's the passion to play for England as there used to be. Look at the players back in the past. You know, the passion they showed to play for England. Terry Butcher, there's a man who showed passion when he played for England. Stuart Pearce, again, good player, showed a lot of passion playing for England. Paul Gascoigne, the same. All these players back in the day, in the 90s, the 80s and 90s, they showed passion playing for England. The players today, they just go out there and they just look like they don't care enough. And I do think that stems from a manager. An England manager needs to be a good man manager. He needs to be able to get these players motivated. And that's why one of the best managers we had was Terry Venables, because he was so good at motivating his players. Mind you, he had pretty good players to pick from, to be fair. Since then, what we've had Sven, we've had Capello. These are managers that the players just don't really... they haven't been able to motivate these players to play. Same with Roy Hodgson. Okay, well, let's wrap it up there anyway before I moan anymore. It has been a really good insight into how the Seagulls Supporters Club originated, how it's been run, and long may that continue. And I think a lot of people do appreciate what you do, Steve, and all the work you put in. And if people hadn't realised the work that has that did go in, maybe they do now.
Yeah, thank you, Richard.
Just keep doing what you're doing, and let's just hope that the Albion can keep doing what they're doing and stay in the Premier League. Thanks again, Steve, for joining us on the show, and
thank you.
We will see you next time.